The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, of course. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's day is May the 5th, 2016. It is a Thursday afternoon. I hope that you all have been making it through the week okay. I'm feeling a whole lot better than the past week, as I, you know, been talking about this issue with my back, but I was able to get out the house today, do some things, feeling a whole lot better. So just wanted to update you on that. We seem to be having some technical issues with our conference line. Okay, I see it seems to be picking up my voice now. So, but before I get started, let me go ahead and give out those telephone numbers. If you would like to call in today and share some information, some news, make an observation, what have you, give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Just hit *6 and 1 anytime you would like to comment. You can also get in touch with the program through the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. All right, so today, as you can tell from the description or the headline for the post for today's program, Donald Trump, I want to focus a little bit on Donald Trump as he compares to Hillary Clinton, because in my informed opinion, I think that when people start talking about the lesser of two evils, and I'm not going to vote for either one of them, assuming Hillary Clinton doesn't get indicted. And, you know, if she gets indicted, I still feel like some of these Democrats will still want her as the nominee. It just doesn't make any sense. But if assuming she does capture the Democratic nomination, I think a whole lot of people who normally might vote Democrat, what have you, I think they won't be able to stomach voting for Hillary Clinton. And I'm one of those people. It looks like for the the third presidential election in a row, I'll be voting for a third party candidate to try to help them get ballot access here in the state of North Carolina, to throw some more third parties in the mix. So that'll be my voting strategy in terms of the 2016 general election. If Hillary Clinton secures the Democratic nomination, Donald Trump pretty much unstoppable on the Republican side. I don't think there's I think there's zero chance that he doesn't get the nomination. In fact, all of the Republicans in Congress and what have you seem to be, you know, lining up behind him and whatnot. And so when people talk about voting for the lesser of two evils, again, as I stated, I won't be voting for either Trump or Clinton, because there is nothing on either's platform that I'm really, you know, looking at and saying, you know, this is enough for me right here to get a vote, to vote for these people, because I want to see this get pushed, that get passed. I don't see anything. Anything Hillary Clinton is saying, you know, a lot of people have noticed all of a sudden she sounds a lot like her Democratic rival in the current race, and that's Bernie Sanders. And so, you know, this woman just flip-flops like a dead fish, you know, on the side of a riverbank or something, man. I mean, I just don't trust her, period. She just flip-flops too much. But when I look at both of these individuals, it's hands down, in my opinion, my informed opinion, that Hillary Clinton would be the greater evil. Even though Donald Trump is doing all this, you know, racist dog whistles and what have you, and you know, really trying to appeal to the white working class voters and what have you. But still, you know, what has he done as compared to the Clintons that have harmed black people so much? Now, I, you know, hear people talking about he took out a full page ad in the, I think it was New York Post or New York Daily, one of those New York newspapers, attacking the so-called Central Park Five, which was five black teenagers who were falsely accused of raping a white woman in Central Park who was jogging. As it turns out, you know, these teens were innocent. And so, you know, that's what they talk about. That's what they talk about. Now, to me, you know, that does not compare to the things that Bill and Hillary Clinton has done. And I don't separate the two. People want to try to say, well, you know, you can't hold her accountable for what Bill Clinton signed into law. Well, yes, we can, because she, you know, advocated for those laws. She just didn't sit on the sidelines. She was out there pushing and working for the votes to pass this legislation and what have you, you know, wrangling the Democrats to vote for the crime bill and what have you. So when I look at what the, I can't separate Bill from Hillary, but even if we just let Hillary stand alone, as a New York senator, I don't remember her really addressing any issues dealing with racism or poverty or anything like that. That the words that's coming out of her mouth now, are all she's doing is parroting what Bernie Sanders has said. That's all she's doing. She is not authentic, as many people have pointed out. But when I look at her as the New York senator, I don't see anything that she did, other than vote for the Iraq war, that was of any consequence. And of course, we know how that Iraq war turned out. Well, it's still going on to this day, as President Obama talks about increasing U.S. troops in Iraq. When I look at her as Secretary of State, that immediately disqualifies her in my mind. I mean, all the scandals, all the shenanigans that was going on while she was Secretary of State, and that's not even including her email, which I'm going to talk about on today's program again, as that story is starting to find new legs. So, you know, when I look at her record in office as Bill Clinton's, you know, teammate, you know, his helpmate, as they call wives and what have you, and I compare that, what they've done, to Donald Trump, there's no way that you can tell me or show me or make an argument, a legitimate argument, that Donald Trump is more dangerous than Hillary Clinton. It just does not stand up to the scrutiny. It just does not. So I find Trump to be the lesser of the evils when we compare Hillary Clinton to him. So, yeah, I'm just wondering what some of y'all thoughts are, if you don't mind calling in and sharing. But I definitely view this woman as a clear and present danger who must be stopped over and beyond Donald Trump. OK, now Some of the other stories that I will talk about, I'm going to get into this Hillary Clinton email scandal some more. As you got this hacker by the name of he goes by Guccifer. I'll share his real name. He's sitting in a Virginia jail right now, and he's talking about, he just gave an interview to Fox News talking about how easy it was for him to hack into Hillary Clinton's private email server that she should have never set up in her basement. So some of the other stories that I want to talk about today also related to that. I noticed yesterday the hashtag on Twitter, Hillary Dropout, was trending. I don't think it reached the top trend, but it was in the top 10, as many Sanders supporters are calling on her to drop out after she lost Indiana. And as this new information or this new cycle of, you know, her email scandal, which is a criminal investigation, despite what some people want to try to tell you. FBI does not investigate civil stuff. They don't have anything to do with security clearances or anything like that. No, they do criminal investigations. And so many people are calling on Hillary Clinton to drop out before she is indicted, because it seems like that indictment is, I just don't see how they cannot indict her with all this out there. All right, another story that we'll get into, Chicago's top prosecutor, Anita Alvarez, who lost her reelection bid, but, you know, she's still in office right now. But she asked the courts to allow her to recuse herself from the case involving Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke, who we all saw on video murdering the black teenager Laquan McDonald. I mean, emptied his clip into this young man who was no clear and present danger to anyone but himself. And so, you know, Jason Van Dyke shot the kid over 16 times, you know, even after he went down, continued to shoot. And from some of the reports, some of the officers had to stop him from reloading and continuing to shoot this kid. So Anita Alvarez has asked the courts to recuse her from the prosecution of Officer Jason Van Dyke, and many of the activists in Chicago have long been calling her to recuse herself. So I know, you know, they are happy with that, but it's still up to the courts on whether or not she will be allowed to recuse herself and her office, everybody in her office, and a special prosecutor, you know, should be appointed. So we'll look at some of the details as that. Here is a story that I want to do my best to keep on your minds, as it certainly is on my mind a lot. But we have prisoners right now on some of America's modern slave plantations conducting work stoppages in Texas as well as Alabama. Now, when I saw, you know, some of the new reports, particularly about Alabama, the Free Alabama Movement, and those guys about to do another work stoppages, you know, it also reminded me of another article that I was reading about Bill Clinton's other crime bill. And it's getting fresh scrutiny as, you know, this bill further stripped prisoners of so-called constitutional rights. And I think I've talked about this last week, or perhaps maybe it wasn't last week, might have been earlier, but I came across that bill and I was like saying, man, you know, stopping these people from seeking relief from abuse and inhumane conditions through the federal courts. And I mean, it's, man, I cannot stress enough all the harm that the Clintons have done to people in general and black people specifically. And, you know, it's not all they're doing, but, you know, because it was a Republican Congress that passed these bills and what have you. So, you know, it's always been a bipartisan effort. You know, when I look back at all the different laws and policies that have been implemented over the past 50 to 60 years that have been detrimental to black life in this country, it's always been a bipartisan effort. You can't say it was all the Republicans. You can't say it was all the Democrats. But I have seen Republican presidents work with Democratic Congresses, you know, majority Democrats in Congress. And, you know, Richard Nixon, they started the modern day drug war, telling lies and whatnot, creating new police forces and giving them this power to target black people, like Nixon said, and what have you. And then, you know, you go to Bill Clinton, he had a Republican kind. So, you know, black folks need to get out of this Republican versus Democrat paradigm that they are pushed into. You don't just call somebody trying to push you into something don't mean that you got to allow them to do it. And when we have been, as a people, equally damaged by both parties. And, you know, just unfortunately, we don't have a lot of other options, whether you want to talk about the Green Party, but they're not in every state. They're not going to be on every ballot. You talk about the Libertarian Party, you know, so, but, you know, that's what we need to be working on. And I do understand there are some people working on, you know, another party that will specifically address the needs of black people. But, you know, I don't know about that. I don't even know if you can start a political party that's race specific. So people need to really think about these things. You know, we don't have to name everything black this or black that. You know, we have to be strategic with our names and you know, depending upon what people activity area that we are going to work in or attempt to, you know, address. You know, we ain't got to always be, you know, saying, you know, black this or black that, because we know that that word or just us period, you know, there's all automatically going to be opposition. So if you want to start a political party, just call it whatever. Don't make it a race specific political party, because I don't even think you can do that in this country. So anyway, I didn't mean to go off on that. But anyway, I want to talk about that particular bill. And then lastly, CEO Obama was in Flint yesterday, and he drank some of Flint's poison water that had been filtered. And, you know, he took a little sip of the glass, declaring that this water is safe to drink. Now, of course, he's talking about the filtered water, and he's telling people to use the filter and all this. But I'm like, man, go sit down somewhere. A little bit too little, too late. You should have been there a long, long time ago, you know, to show some support for these people. And so I want to talk about that. He also stated that he was not there to discuss accountability for the Flint water crimes, as I call them. He's not going to play politics with the situation. I mean, the whole situation is political. So whatever, man, whatever. So we'll take a look at that story. But let's go ahead and jump to this deepening email scandal involving Hillary Clinton. And as I stated on my Black Talk Radio weekly commentary that I do for specifically for Tanya Free and Friends talk show, which comes on Wednesdays, you know, now that Donald Trump has vanquished his, you know, John Kasich and what he called him, Lion Ted. Now Donald Trump has vanquished, you know, those two men who were the last left standing in the Republican race for the presidential nomination. Now he can pivot towards the general election and start really focusing a lot on the presumptive nominee, Hillary Clinton, you know, and he has already been doing that. But since the Democratic race isn't over yet, I mean, you still got California out there, which has over 400 delegates, which if Bernie Sanders could win the majority of those delegates, it would put him past Hillary Clinton. But that's not until June the 7th, I think, is when California has its state primaries and whatnot. So, but, you know, they are presuming, the Republicans, that is, and the Donald Trump team are presuming that Hillary Clinton will be who he faces off in November. So they are already starting in on her. And, you know, they, like I mentioned, Fox News did the interview with this hacker from Romania who was using a server in Russia to hack into more than just Hillary Clinton's email server. But he had, how he got access to Hillary Clinton's private server, according to him, was that he had hacked into Sidney Blumenthal's email account. For those that don't know who Sidney Blumenthal is, he is one of those powerful racist white supremacists that people, you know, who operates in the shadows and what have you. People who don't pay attention to politics wouldn't know who this man was and what have you. But he was one of those that was pushing Hillary Clinton to invade Libya and overthrow that country so that he could set up and make money off of the businesses that white supremacists are going to come into Libya and set up and what have you. So this hacker who goes by Lucifer, his real name is Marcel Lazar LaHale, but he calls himself, his hack goes by his hacker name Lucifer. He was able to get Sidney's Blumenthal email, get into his email account. And then he started noticing that, you know, that Blumenthal was getting emails from the Clinton.com server that she had set up in her basement so that she could circumvent U.S. laws pertaining to the Freedom of Information Act request. You know, get it off of the government system, hide this in your basement, nobody will know, and all this and that, and then you can, you know, be free to discuss your white supremacist plans for global domination and enriching your own pockets, and nobody will be the wiser. Except for Lucifer noticed this Clinton.com, you know, email address and hacked into her server. Again, we ain't talking about no Gmail account. We ain't talking about a Yahoo account. We ain't talking about a Hotmail account. We're talking about somebody who set a server or email server up in their own house. And so I'm going to go ahead and just run this clip. And again, I know some people out there, because I know how they are, they will be trying to dismiss these news reports because the sources may be like Fox News or the Daily Caller or something like that. But the facts are the facts. You know, I know how to separate people's opinions from the facts, but this is getting very, very, well, it was already serious, but it's starting to heat up. This is starting to heat up with this guy, Lucifer, talking to the media and what have you. So let me go ahead and find that clip. I thought I had it loaded up. No problem. I'll go ahead and load it up again. Just bear with me a moment. Here we go. News clips. So this is a report that came out yesterday on Fox News, and they're talking about the interview with this hacker. And this is how Hillary Clinton's email server got exposed. I was mistaken in my reporting because I didn't have any other sources, and all the sources I was finding was saying, you know, that it was the Benghazi congressional hearings that discovered, you know, the existence of Hillary Clinton's email server. And then I thought it was Judicial Watch that exposed it, because they are the ones with the civil lawsuit pertaining to, you know, the email server and the Freedom of Information Act request that they were denied, saying that these emails didn't exist. But, you know, the people working at the State Department at that time didn't know Hillary Clinton had this server. So I thought it was either the Benghazi hearings, which was chaired by Trey Gowdy out of South Carolina. Then I thought it was the right wing legal organization Judicial Watch. But then I found out that it was actually cause of Lucifer hacking into her email. And when he hacked into her email, he downloaded a whole bunch of stuff. He's even saying now he's got about a gigabyte of information he downloaded off of her server that he hid somewhere and whatnot. He's probably going to try to use it as a bargaining chip and what have you. But when he first hacked into that server, he turned over some of those emails to the news outlet Russia Today. And that is how the existence of her private server in her basement, her secret server in her basement, came to light. And Russia Today published the emails between her and Sidney Blumenthal talking about the real reason they wanted to overthrow Libya. It didn't have nothing to do with protecting a bunch of radical Islamic idiots who were attacking people in Benghazi. And well, it didn't have nothing to do with that. That was all a lie. All right. It had to do with they wanted to overthrow Libya because Libya was making moves that was going to change the balance of economic power on the planet by working with African countries to create a African currency, United African currency, backed by gold, which would immediately topple the U.S. dollar in terms of buying power, or, you know, the preferred currency for trading on the global market. It would have put Africa, that African currency, on top. Okay, so that's the real reason they went in there. And those emails were found by Guccifer the hacker, the Romanian hacker, turned over to Russia Today. And then that is how we found out about Hillary Clinton's secret email server she set up in her basement. So this is what Fox News was talking about yesterday.
The Clinton server, easy or hard?
No, for me, what is it? What is it? For me, for everybody.
The internet hacker known as Guccifer claiming he was able to get into Hillary Clinton's private email server. And we're back now with the panel. Well, let's start with the exclusive interview that Catherine Herridge did with Guccifer. Steve, if the FBI is able to show that in fact, he was able to get into her server. How damaging for Clinton legally and politically?
Well, I think it would be tremendously damaging politically. I mean, if what he just said to Catherine is true, that not only did he access her server, but it was easy to do so, I think it would provide further evidence that foreign governments had hacked her server. I mean, we think that that's been the case already. You talk to folks who are experts on intelligence and on cyber hacking, and they will tell you that it's almost a certainty that that's already happened. Look, this should be a huge political liability, but it also should be a legal liability for her. You've had people like Michael Mukasey lay out the case that Hillary Clinton, based on the evidence that we know publicly, should already have been indicted. I've talked to national security lawyers, Republican and Democrat, who say if this were a mid-ranking CIA officer that I was representing who did exactly what Hillary Clinton did, what we know she did, they would have already lost their clearances. They probably would have lost their job, and they might well be in jail. It's taken an awful long time. We can only hope that they're actually doing a serious investigation and treating it impartially.
Charles, does the alleged mishandling of classified information become a lot more serious if someone actually accessed it, actually got into it?
Absolutely, because it turns what would be hypothetical, theoretical, into something real. It's one thing to say she jeopardized national security or could have, should have thought about it, and thus is a culpable. If it turns out that a guy in Romania, you know, an individual, one guy hacker was able to get in easily, which means the Chinese, the Russians, the Iranians, all the others have gotten in, that is, there is real damage at that point. Apart from the legalities, it's hugely politically damaging.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's I have no choice over it in the first place. To me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio. So, again, this is getting pretty heated for Hillary Clinton with this information coming out. I just don't think that the Justice Department can get away with not indicting this woman, you know, and this really does speak to her qualifications. People want to say she's the most qualified person to be the next CEO of America. Really? How can you say that with all of this big old mess that she created at the State Department? Just because a person has a bunch of jobs, moved from place to place, just because they've held all these titles does not mean that makes them qualified. All right? It doesn't. And so, you know, people just need to start getting serious. This woman is a clear and present danger to people all over the planet. I don't care who you are. This woman is just, oh, man. So anyway, we'll see what happens. But I expect in the the remaining months until the general election for Donald Trump and the Republicans to really hammer her on these issues, really hammering her. And you know, it's just sad. It's just really, really sad that the Democrats want to put their eggs in a basket of a criminal who's soon going to be indicted and what have you. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Of course, President Obama's doing everything he can to persuade the public that there's nothing to see here. Move along. She didn't really do anything. But, you know, that's just all a lie. But he has vested interest in seeing her get away with this because from what I've heard is that he possibly might be among those she was emailing from that private server. So he might not be able to claim plausible deniability and say, oh, I didn't know, you know, that's all Hillary, you know, bad choice that she made, which he already said she made a horrendous choice and what have you. But I mean, you only saying this now that it's come to light. And if it does turn out to be that he was emailing her on that private unsecure server and he didn't, you know, try to address the situation or whatnot, you know, that's really just going to tarnish him as well. So we'll see as this thing continues to heat up. It's not going away. All right. It is not going away as much as people want to wish it away. It's not going to happen. All right. Moving on. As I stated at the beginning of the program, Anita Alvarez, who is the Cook County prosecutor, Cook County also, Chicago is also in Cook County. She's been on that job for something like 30, 35 years, something like that. So yesterday she was at the courthouse, and in a surprise move, according to reporters, Cook County State Attorney Anita Alvarez announced that, well, this was actually today, not yesterday, announced that she would recuse herself from the case of this killer cop who we all saw murder Laquan McDonald, Officer Jason Van Dyke, saying this happened on Thursday today during Officer Jason Van Dyke's court appearance. And so the judge said that he's going to rule on it, but he hasn't made a decision yet. Alvarez is maintaining that there is no conflict of interest for her to handle the prosecution. So I really don't understand why she's being asking to be removed from the case or whatnot. Well, because there is a conflict of interest. She just doesn't want to admit it. This woman has a long-standing relationship with the police unions and what have you. Over a year, she had that video of Van Dyke murdering Laquan McDonald, and she never moved to charge him. And she, I would argue, was not going to charge him if that video was not released. If that judge had not ruled in favor of the Journalist Freedom of Information Act request and they made that video public, Van Dyke, you know, he would probably be back out on the streets by now. All right. So this woman definitely has a conflict of interest. And I would argue that most prosecutors do have a conflict of interest. Most of them work with the police hand in hand. They are not separate, even though they might be working out of separate offices and whatnot. No, that's a partnership. That's a collaboration to put as many people in the 21st century slavery and human trafficking as possible. All right, so there's always a conflict of interest, if you ask me, between prosecutors and police. So the judge, his name is Vincent Goggin, and he said he wanted more time to consider the request. Now, like I've said, you know, a lot of the activists in Chicago have already been calling for her to recuse herself and asking for a special prosecutor to be appointed. And who knows, it's all up to this judge now. Alvarez is, you know, even though she's full of crap, she is asking to be recused, but I do not know if that's going to happen, because she's at the same time talking out the side of her mouth saying she has no conflict of interest. So what grounds then would the judge have to allow herself to be removed, or anybody in her office? I think she just did that to try to appear to be like, oh, I'm doing the right thing and all this and that. And but possibly knowing that she isn't given good reasons, legal reasons to be removed, that she'll stay on the case. And then, you know, she'll have that plausible deniability and saying, well, I asked to be removed, so, you know, don't point at me because this guy got off and what have you. So anyway, we'll keep our eye on that case. But as most people know, especially people in Chicago, Alvarez will not, this be her last term. She lost to Kim Fox, a black woman who will be the new Cook County prosecutor once Alvarez's term is up. So all right, still going to be keeping our eye on that case. All right, moving on to another story. Next story that I want to share with you, as we got about 15 more minutes left in this live broadcast. By the way, Tando Radio Show will be on air today at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you tune in for that. Brother Dave always has some great information to share, especially in terms of what true wealth is and, you know, currency and finances and things of that nature. Blacks in Business Radio, something has come up with both of the hosts, so they will not be on air today. So, unfortunately, but we will be running like a pre-recorded broadcast they did earlier during their regular appointed time. All right, so moving on to this next story. A lot of people, you may not be aware, but prisoners in Texas and now Alabama are striking against inhumane conditions against abusive treatment, the exploitation of their labor, which is slavery. That's all it is. It's slavery. And now Bill Clinton's other crime bill is getting fresh scrutiny. All right. So Texas has been on, those guys in Texas have been on strike for about a week and a half now. They are being retaliated against. You may not hear about this on any other corporate media outlets. Maybe a few might report on it. Maybe some local stations will report on it. But for the most part, their work strike has largely gone ignored. But I do want to play this clip from, let me see who this is from. I think this is from Russia Today. This is from Russia Today, where they are talking about the Texas inmates' protest of slave-like conditions. No, it's not slave-like. It is slavery. Read the 13th Amendment. That's all you got to do. Then you won't be confused about what's going on. So let's go ahead and give this a listen. Give me just a moment as I get this thing right. All right, here we go.
In Texas now, a historic strike is taking place that's essentially been ignored by the media. Perhaps because it's not your average strike organized by your average worker. It's been orchestrated by prisoners who say they are treated like slaves. Among their concerns are that of food and water quality, low wages, overcrowding, and poor working conditions, with some prisoners working in the Texas heat with no air conditioning. To expand on their grievances, we're joined now by Jim Del Duca of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. Thanks so much for joining me, Jim. We'll get to the working conditions in a moment, but can you first just describe the problems with basic living conditions in these prisons and stating the demands of the prisoners?
Well, I think the living conditions are common to all prisoners in the United States, generally, and that's overcrowding. Every prison we know of has more people incarcerated than they've been designed for. So that's a real basic thing.
And what about labor? What are some of the jobs prisoners have and the problems with their working conditions? I mean, I mentioned working in the Texas heat with no air conditioning. There have also been allegations of forced labor here, no?
Well, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which people believe ended slavery, actually didn't. There's a little caveat in that amendment saying, except for people convicted of a crime. So legally, prisoners are still slaves, just like before the Civil War, and they're treated as such, which means when we talk about wages for prisoners, they can be working for nothing or 5 cents an hour. It's horrible.
It is shocking to hear that number, but for the sake of presenting this argument to viewers, because I can imagine them saying, well, you know, taxpayers are funding the roof over their head, so they don't need the money. I mean, what do you say to that kind of mentality? Because these are people working for, like you said, slave wages.
Well, people are making a profit off of them. Yes, the taxpayers do ostensibly fund prisons, but the fact of the matter is that private corporations use prison labor to manufacture goods, which then make profits. And these profits don't go back to the prisoners. They don't go back to the prison system to lower the burden on the taxpayers. It's a profit-producing system, just like a plantation in the old days.
I'm glad you brought up that point. I'm wondering if you can give for a viewer some examples of labor that prisoners have to do.
Practically anything. Our workers, our members, you know, we're a labor union, the industrial workers of the world, and our members do anything from producing chemicals to construction work to producing items for the United States military. A lot of military contractors use prison labor, and of course everyone knows that the military is paying high dollars to the corporations. The big dollars don't go down to the prisoners. They go in the pockets of the corporations.
Right. So it's essentially a way for the corporations to maximize profits by not employing a proper labor force. But what are some of the things prisoners need money for? Because like you said, these are extremely low wages, but there are costs that prisoners have, right? I know, for example, phone calls home, a simple call home to talk to your children can be very expensive.
Well, that's a great example. a dollar or more a minute, and the prisoners have to buy phone cards at exorbitant rates. But also in Texas specifically, where our members are on strike, there's a policy of a $100 copay simply for medical services. So, you know, a prisoner making 5 cents an hour, it takes a long time just to earn enough money to pay for basic medical services.
Right. I mean, that's way more than even I would pay to receive medical care. But finally, you know, Americans are already so disconnected from the labor that produces the things that they use every day. They're even probably more disconnected from imagining that prisoners getting paid slave wages are producing their goods. What can people on the outside do to help their cause?
Well, make sure you're not buying slave-made goods. Join a labor union. Contact us, the Industrial Workers of the World, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. Donate. Now, if you want to help, we will find a way for you to help.
All right. Jim Del Duca of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, thank you so much for enlightening viewers on that struggle.
It's our pleasure. Thanks.
Wow, I was totally not expecting this guy to mention the fact that the 13th Amendment does not abolish slavery. Man, we were just talking about that last night on New Abolitionist Radio. You know, we've been talking about it for the past 5 years here on Black Talk Radio Network when we first launched New Abolitionist Radio, the program that focuses on 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And, you know, we have often, you know, expressed frustration over the politically correct term or use of the term mass incarceration, because it does not really convey exactly what it is we're dealing with. All right, you tell people what you say slavery, then, you know, all the horrors that are associated with slavery gets conveyed. When you say something like mass incarceration, well, you just think about overcrowded prisons. You don't necessarily think about that this is slavery, you know, that these are the modern day plantations and what have you. So I'm pleasantly surprised to see more and more people get access to mainstream corporate media, and they use the correct language to name what it is that people are facing here in the, well, not just here in the United States, but globally, you know, because corporations like the GEO Group, which is based in Boca Raton, Florida, they have just taken over, well, not just, but last year, they took over Australia's entire prison system. All right, Correction Corporation of America. I think that's based in Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken, but it's the world's largest private prison enslaver corporation in the world. All right, they operate in Israel. They operate, I mean, just all over the planet. G4S, which is a British-based so-called security corporation, they are the largest employer in Africa, employing Africans to enslave other Africans in these prisons and what have you. So, again, you know, people need to wake up from those lies that they've been programmed with all their lives. And it's no shame in being fooled. It's no shame. Look, I did not come to the realization that this country never abolished slavery until I actually read the 13th Amendment about maybe, you know, a little over 5 years ago. And I was like in shock. I was literally in shock. I'm like, I kind of consider myself to be well-read, educated and whatnot, you know, and I was like, damn, how did this slip by me like that? You know, this big old exception clause in the 13th Amendment. So people, wake up to what's really going on and use the right language to describe it. It's not mass incarceration. That only hints at overcrowding. All right. Call it what it is. Call it slavery. Now, one correction to what the guy said. It is not just private corporations that's profiting off of prison slave labor. Unicor, that's spelled UNICOR, is owned. It's a corporation. True, indeed, it is a corporation. But the parent corporation of Unicor is USA Inc., meaning the United States of America, which many people don't know, became a corporation, at least the government did, became a corporation in 1871. So here we have a federal government running a prison plantation where they sell goods and services to other corporations. Same thing goes on in the state prisons. It's not just private prisons. It's everybody. Everybody's getting in on this free labor, you know. And then they mention the term slave wages. Another thing, another pet peeve of mine, you know, cause somebody getting paid minimum wage, that's not slave wages. All right. Even if they're not making enough to support themselves, you know, that's not slave wages. Slave wages, that term came about because some enslaved Africans were actually paid a wage, especially if they were highly skilled, like in, you know, textiles, not just picking cotton, but I'm talking about, you know, making dresses and stuff like that, making clothing, blacksmiths and what have you, you know, was a huge industry back in the day when everybody was using horse and buggies, and many of the Angolan Africans were well versed in metalworking and what have you, and so they were paid pennies on the dollar, you know, and that's where the term slave wages came from. So we have people today who are actually being paid slave wages, you know. Again, you know, they don't get to choose to leave that job. They don't get to quit or anything. Like, you can choose to leave McDonald's and stop working for KFC or you know, Walmart or any of those places. You can choose not to work there. You have a choice, whereas these people don't have a choice. And even now as we speak, by them saying, you know, we're not going to take this no more, we're not going to run your prisons for you, we're not going to do this work until we're treated like human beings, until we're paid properly for our labor, because we still got families too and all this and that, we're not going to work. And so they're being retaliated against. I'm even hearing that they're being denied food as a retaliation and what have you. Same thing is also about to kick off at the Free Alabama movement has been around for a couple of years. At least I'm aware of it. We've actually had some of those prisoners call in to the station when they can to let us know what's going on, although we haven't heard from them in a very, very long time. But this is some news coming out, came out today. From Jack Denton. I'm going to go ahead and share that with you. Despite being held in solitary confinement for the years, men known as Kinetic. We definitely talked to Brother Kinetic. Dehati and Brother M, primary leaders of the Free Alabama Movement, have been instrumental in organizing a statewide prison work stoppage in Alabama that began on Sunday, May the 1st. Currently, the prison labor strike has begun at Alabama's Holman Station and Elmore Correctional Facilities. St. Clair stoppage will begin on May 9th, with Donaldson and other correctional facilities to follow soon after. The current plan is for the work stoppage to last 30 days, although the movement's leaders said the length of the strike is contingent on the cooperation of legislators in regard to reforming the prison labor system and the conditions of the prisons. The Free Alabama Movement is an activist network of incarcerated men spanning numerous state prisons across Alabama. I have posted this to New Abolitionist Radio's Facebook page. I also linked to it for those on Black Talk Radio Network viewing the broadcast page for today. And of course, it'll be there as the podcast if you want to get more information. And so, you know, the best thing that we can do in support right now for them is to keep reporting their stories, to call these legislators in these states and advocate on their behalf. As I stated before I got into this, Bill Clinton, his other terrible crime bill, and again, it's not just the Clintons, it was the Republicans too, but now they are looking at another bill that Bill Clinton also signed. It's called the Prison Litigation Reform Act, which emerged from a provision in the 1994 bill. It shut the door to federal courts for thousands of prisoners seeking to appeal their convictions, weakened court protections, and lowered fees awardable to lawyers in lawsuits concerning prison conditions. Again, all this nonsense about unintended consequences. If you read these bills, and not just this bill, and you couple it with other bills like the so-called Welfare Reform Act, they entirely intended for these outcomes. So don't believe the lies. Don't believe the lies. They just made slavery even worse for these people trapped on today's modern plantations. And it's like, you know, slaves don't have no rights. And so, you know, they had a few rights in terms of the Constitution and what have you, but they took those away from them to make them really, you know, like the slaves that first stepped off of the ships, you know, after they were kidnapped from Africa. So this is very serious, very, very serious. So check out that article as well. And lastly, the last thing I want to discuss before we wrap up the program, President Obama was in Flint, Michigan. All right, he was in Flint, Michigan. I believe this was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. I'm waiting for this article to load up from NBC25News.com. When I first read this story, I thought it was satire at first. You know, the photo shows President Obama with a glass of water, and he's sipping from this water. All right, so let me go ahead and share some of this article with you. Again, I've linked up to it, but it has been confirmed this is true. Showing support for beleaguered residents of Flint, Michigan, President Barack Obama drank filtered city water on Wednesday to show that it is again safe following a lead contamination crisis. After officials briefed Obama on the federal government's response to the contamination and he addressed the news media, a reporter asked if he would drink the water in a glass on the table. The president said he usually avoids publicity stunts, but he took a drink, saying he wanted to show the water must be safe if he's drinking it. This used a filter, Obama said, of the water. The water around this table was Flint water, and it just confirms what we know scientifically, which is if you're using a filter, if you're installing it, then Flint water at this point is drinkable. All right. Obama declared a state of emergency in Flint in mid-January and ordered federal aid to supplement the state and local response. At that point, however, the crisis was in full bloom. It took several months for the nation to focus on the beaten down city's plight, raising questions about how race and poverty influenced decisions that led to the tainted water supply and the beleaguered response once problems surfaced. More than 40% of Flint residents live in poverty, and more than half are Black. Now, this last part I want to share. Obama making his first visit to the city since the crisis began, and I remember when he was at that car show in Detroit, just a few miles away. I was like, man, you know, he couldn't find time in his schedule, you know, maybe cut his little photo op at the Detroit Auto Show short and go to Flint and at least pretend like he care about these people. No, this is his first visit since the nation has become aware of what was going on in Flint. All right. So Obama, making his first visit to the city since the crisis began, said the discussion during the briefing underscored that local, state, and federal officials must ensure that residents are healthy and have safe water to drink. He said he didn't go to Flint to discuss issues of accountability. There are times for politics and there are times for turf battles. This is not one of those times, Obama said. All of us are going to have to really keep our eye on the ball, even when the cameras go away. He said the water crisis stemmed from a broader issue, the hard times and neglect that had gripped Flint long ago. He said the focus now must be on rebuilding and moving the city in a better direction. This is a similar answer that he gave when he first came into office, when the scandal was made known about the CIA torture policy, and they were torturing and even killing people. You know, after they kidnapped these people from various countries and sent them to CIA black sites and waterboarding people and subjecting them to extreme cold and stress positions and sexual abuse, and I mean just all kind of stuff. What did Obama come in the door saying? We're not going to look backwards. We're going to look forward. You know, no accountability. No accountability for the torturers at the CIA. He even kept on the Bush appointee. What's the guy's name? Brennan, who's the head of the CIA right now. So he doesn't plan on holding nobody accountable. All right? He doesn't. I mean, not that he can, but he certainly can order the Department of Justice. He can put pressure on these people that he has appointed to bring forth criminal charges and what have you. And so here he is again. We're not going to look backwards. We're going to look forward and whatnot. You know, this is why these things keep happening. It's because of the lack of accountability. When people can do these, commit these heinous crimes, these terrorist acts against us, and not be held accountable, then that just, you know, gives the next one, you know, the audacity to do the same thing, because they're seeing nobody's being held accountable. The same thing with police terrorism in this country. So, you know, Obama has really dropped the ball on this. Is it all his fault? No, it's not. But he has not shown good leadership on this issue. Again, he just now, yesterday, making his way to Flint. So anyway, definitely we'll keep you informed as a station on what's going on in Flint. If you by chance did not catch the broadcast of Shifting Paradigms on Sunday afternoon here on Black Talk Radio Network, Sister Zion interviewed Precious, who is a resident and victim of Flint, Flint water crisis and whatnot. And I mean, go listen to that show. Go hear it from somebody on ground zero about what's going on in Flint. All right. Don't listen to President Obama. Don't listen to any of these pundits. Listen to the people that's on the ground. All right. And so go check out that. Of course, the podcast is there in her archives for Shifting Paradigms. It was a very touching and moving interview. I really feel for Precious. And she is one of those residents that wants to relocate but doesn't have the means to relocate. And, you know, President Obama cares more about, and not just President Obama, let's just say the U.S. government cares more about relocating Syrian refugees to America than they are about relocating victims of the Flint water crimes to safer areas. So, again, don't forget, Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. today right here on Black Talk Radio Network. That concludes this broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. Do want to remind you of the ongoing crowdfunding Black Media campaign, where if you donate $25 or more to the Black Talk Media Project, a registered North Carolina-based nonprofit, we will give you in exchange a Black Radio Stations Matter T-shirt, working on getting some more T-shirts. I know some people was asking me about extra, extra large shirts. I put in some orders for some extra, extra large shirts, as well as some more extra large. Those seem to be the most popular. So I'll have those new shirts next week, and I'll let everybody know. Also still working on some new designs, just doing everything I can think of to fund the work of the Black Talk Media Project so we can build more than just one platform called Black Talk Radio Network, you know, with various independent black radio stations on it. But we actually would like to grow the budget to where we can actually put brick and mortar media centers in these communities where we live and run radio stations and whatnot out of those, have a diverse operation, not just digital radio, but low power FM terrestrial radio as well, you know, as a backup and what have you. So yeah, please, if you're so inclined, and if you think black radio stations, and not just radio stations with black people on them, but actual radio stations that are owned and managed by black people, if you think that's important to have independent black radio stations, then please support our crowdfunding black media campaign. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a battlefield out there, people being shot down in the streets, being snatched up by the slave catchers, put into modern day slavery where they will toil for the profits of federal government, the state government, as well as these private corporations. It's very serious out there for far, far too many people. So we need to be doing everything we can to make sure we don't get caught up in the system. Not to say anything that we do is our fault for our mistreatment, because it is not. But we don't want to give people any excuses. No drinking and driving, no drugging and driving. All right, don't do that. Don't speed down the highway without a seatbelt, and just make it easy for these people, man. All right, so y'all be safe out there, man, and behind these enemy lines. I do not want any of you to get killed, and I definitely don't want any of you to be enslaved on today's modern day plantations in this 21st century. Until tomorrow, peace and blessings to all.